Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, Orlando entrepreneurs. My name is Josh, and I'm an entrepreneur just like you. And I travel around Orlando, and I interview other founders, entrepreneurs, and people who support the entrepreneurial community. On today's show, I'm really excited about having this conversation, and you guys get to be a part of this conversation and carry on this conversation later on, and we'll share with you how. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome to the show Carol Cox, the founder of Speaking Your Brand and fellow podcast host. She's a podcast host of a show called Speaking Your Brand. So Carol Cox, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Josh. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah. So as a fellow podcast host and a fellow founder, why don't you tell us, you know, tell me in the audience what you do? What are you up to?
Sure. So I founded Speaking Your Brand a few years ago to help entrepreneurs with their public speaking and specifically with their content. I'm sure, Josh, you have been to a lot of conferences and groups over the years, as have I, and you see speakers and presenters, and a lot of the times their content is pretty good. Like, you're learning something valuable, but there's something missing in it. You don't quite get how they could help you with whatever their business is. Or it's they provide way too much information, and so you feel really overloaded, or on the opposite end, it's really superficial information that you could just Google and find out. And so really, I help entrepreneurs find the happy medium between in that and the best content to get results when they're out speaking.
I think this is going to be a fun conversation, because people who jump up on stage, first of all, that's got to be, I mean, it's scary for me. Anytime I've had to do it, I shake, I sweat, and I talk for a living, right? But jumping in front of people is terrifying. So having a specific purpose to actually get that, you know, that result you want is it sounds like that's what's key. So how do you go about doing that for an entrepreneur?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways. So being nervous before a speaking engagement is entirely normal. I still get nervous before a speaking engagement. I know of speakers who speak 300 times a year. That's their profession. And it's not our profession as entrepreneurs, but for them it is. They say they still get nervous. So it's okay. It's learning how to channel that nervous energy and to use it to your advantage. So I help my clients with that. But what I have found helps the most with nerves is being really comfortable with your material. And so I help them create what I call their signature talk. So there's something that they're doing on a regular basis. What happened to me in before I started Speaking Your Brand, I had two technology businesses and I would do a lot of presentations, but I would do it on all types of topics: mobile marketing, customer loyalty, gamification, web, you know, UI. Like, if you had a topic, I would do it. I would create a presentation, but I wasn't known for one thing. And then I would have to create a presentation every time, which I love to do, but takes a lot of time. Most people don't want to do it. And so then I would constantly have to prepare and practice for that. But when you have a signature talk, you get really comfortable with that material. You know how to tweak it and how to repurpose it so you can have more fun with it. So that's going to help with the nerves. And you become known for that thing. So when someone says, I need someone who does X, or I need a speaker who talks about X, your name is the first name that should come to mind.
So this kind of goes for the topic of specialist versus generalist, right? So you were a generalist and you had all these topics and you would talk about anything, but you really weren't really well known. So you started to focus. Now, for an entrepreneur, focusing is the most difficult, scary thing in the world to do, especially for people like me. How did you go about doing that in your own life?
I think I just had to start looking at the results or the lack of results that I was getting. And after you do, you know, speaking takes time, it takes effort, it takes energy. Sometimes it takes money if you're traveling to go somewhere. So you need to get something back out of it. Now, I happen to love doing public speaking. I know a lot of people out there do, but you still have to balance the ROI with that, the time that it takes in your business. So I was doing all these speaking engagements. People loved the content. I got great feedback, but it wasn't driving my business forward. I wasn't getting leads and clients from the speaking engagements. And that's when I realized that there is a better way to do it. And it's integrating what you do in your business into your content. I do not sell from the stage. I do not like the term sell from the stage. If you kind of go in speaking circles, you'll start to hear that. And no one wants to listen to an infomercial when they're at a conference or they're at a group. But there's a way to integrate that into your content so people know what you do, who you work with, the results that you get without having to say, and if you sign up today, you get $100 off my signature program.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you had that, I would buy that right this minute, right?
Right.
So let me ask you a question. As you decided to choose this, you know, a specialty within your talks, when you doing this for yourself, right? When you started to say, I'm not getting an ROI, which for the audience listening, that's return on investment. So I'm giving time, energy, money. I look to get an investment from that if I'm going to put forth effort. So you're not getting an ROI in your speaking engagements. Maybe I need to specialize. What did you start to specialize as your signature talk?
So it happened when I started Speaking Your Brand, this new company several years ago. So I have a broad background in business and technology. I could really be a general business coach, or I could do marketing consulting, but I knew that there's too many of those. It's too broad. And I knew I had to niche down, talking about being a specialist. And so I decided to focus specifically on helping entrepreneurs with their speaking. Now, a lot of the times business and marketing creep in. And so I'll put my business hat on, or I'll put my marketing hat on, and I'll help them with that. But I knew if I came out of the gate and just advertised myself as a general business coach, it's too hard for people on the other side to say, well, what exactly does she do and how exactly does she help me? As an entrepreneur starting a company, you want your ideal clients to say, oh yes, I get it. That's exactly what I need right now.
Yeah. Well, did that freak you out? Because when a lot of times when I work with entrepreneurs, and even myself included, when you go to a specialization, it feels like you're saying no to all this opportunity. So if I only focus on speaking, that means I'm going to miss out on opportunities to do web dev or to do design work. Did that freak you out a little bit?
No, actually it does for most people, but I really gravitated to it, and I've seen how effective it has been. So here's a story that maybe will help your listeners understand why niching down, even though it seems scary, is so much better. I have a woman that I worked with several years ago, and I was helping her. She was a client of mine, and this was probably 3 or 4 years ago. Last December, I got a prospect inquiry from someone. I had never heard of this person before, so I talked to her on the phone, and I said, how did you hear about me? And she said, well, I'm in Acapulco, Mexico right now, vacationing with my husband, and we were having a conversation at dinner last night with a couple we met at the bar. And I told them that I wanted to do more speaking for my career. And the other woman said, well, you need to talk to Carol Cox. This is right. So as soon as she heard someone wanted to do more speaking, she knew exactly to refer me. Now, if I was just a general business coach and I worked with startups and I worked with businesses that had been in business for 15 years and I worked with brick and mortars and I worked with, it's like it's too much. People just don't know then who to refer you to.
Yeah, it's so genius, and it's so true, yet it's still, for me, it's fearful. But if you were to ask my mom or even grandmom, like, hey, what does Josh do? They would have no clue. But if I were more specialized, there were a lot of entrepreneurs out there, a lot more focused and specialized, and your grandma could talk about you to their hairstylist or whatever, you probably have a lot more referrals coming in. Is that right?
Yes, I love. Yeah, if your mom and grandma can't explain what you do, that's probably a good indication that you. Now, here's the thing: you can always expand later. So this is the beauty of the age that we live in. We don't have to stay doing one thing all the time. So start narrow in your niche. Really, the more narrow, the better. I know it seems counterintuitive. Start narrow, and then you can widen bit by bit as you start getting more well-known.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, listening into this podcast, one of the benefits, I'm going to whisper so not everybody hears it, but one of the benefits of being a podcast host is you get free business coaching and advice from incredible like speakers and like Carol. So I'm getting free advice that I'm going to apply to my business. I just want you to know that this benefits me too. So
yeah,
back to you, Carol.
No, I agree. As I do the same thing as a podcast host, I will reach out to people. And I'm like, what is something that I want to learn about? Let me bring a guest.
Yeah. Oh, it's genius. So you travel around and you talk to, you specifically focus on entrepreneurs. Talk to us about like your ideal customer. Like, who is your ideal person that you like to work with?
So as an entrepreneur who's been in business for at least generally to about 2 years. And the reason I say that is because if you're just starting out in business, you don't quite know enough about your business. You're kind of testing the market. You're testing who are your best customers. You're kind of working with different people, which is great. And maybe you don't even know what your niche is yet because you just haven't worked with enough people to know that. So you're still kind of in that process. Now, you could go out and do some speaking, and I encourage you to do that so that you can meet people and become known, but you're probably too early to have a signature talk because you just haven't done enough work yet in your business. So I would say about the 2 year mark is what I see. So I've worked with people who've been in business for 2 years and people who've been in business for 35 years. So it runs the gamut. And it's mostly, most of my clients are coaches, consultants, and strategists. Because those type of service-based businesses, they know that speaking is a great marketing channel for them because speaking in person really accelerates that know, like, and trust factor for people to want to do work with you, and especially in a service-based business as a coach, a consultant, a, you know, marketing strategist, a web developer, what have you. People are buying you as much as they're buying the product or service that you're selling.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So for, you know, the consultants out there, the service-based CEOs and founders, you know, when people buy a service, it's not a commodity, like it's not just a coffee mug, but they're buying your design, your skill set, your approach to sales or marketing. So speaking up on stage really does a few things from what I'm hearing, and maybe you could add in a few more, boost your credibility, and you're speaking to a bunch of potential clients at one time. What other benefits are there to becoming a speaker?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely the credibility, the lead generation, referrals to other speaking engagements, because speakers get gigs from other speakers, and you know, once you kind of get known that you're out there, then you'll get invitations to other things. And then it also helps you to build your own personal brand. So for a lot of entrepreneurs, they're very busy building their business brand, understandably, but you never know what's going to happen to your business. You may decide to shift your business focus maybe after a year or two and you realize you need to pivot. Or maybe you're going to exit. Maybe your business has been in business for a few years and you're thinking of exiting in one way or another. So you still want to be known for who you are and what matters to you so that when you're ready to do your next thing, then you have that platform to do it.
Yeah. And I think we live in an age where we are responsible for building our own brand, building our own, you know, voice. Because, I mean, back in the day, I would assume you work for Morgan Stanley and the calls come in and you have to, you know, just route those calls. But as internet is getting bigger and bigger, social media is getting bigger and bigger, we have to attract our own tribe. Is that right? Do you feel the same way?
Yes. And that, right. And even if you're, I mean, most of the people listening to this are entrepreneurs, but even if you're, say, working at a company right now and you're interested in starting your own business, that, you know, you never know what's going to happen in your job at a company, whatever the company size is. So you have to have your own personal brand and your own visibility out there so that you can take advantage of opportunities when they come. Now, you mentioned social media. And this is something that I'm kind of get on my soapbox about. So, you know, I teach business and marketing. I've been online for years and years and years. I have a tech background, but I think that with all the emphasis online and social media, we've forgotten the importance of our local communities and our local networks and building relationships locally. And that's why I love what you're doing, Josh, with this podcast, focusing on Orlando entrepreneurs and really helping to strengthen that community, because those are the people that you're going to turn to when you need them. And those are the people that you're going to be really close to because you have that in-person face-to-face time that you can do locally that you can do in a sense online, but I don't think online should be a replacement for our local relationships.
I love it. And I guess this is my specialty on this show is Orlando entrepreneurs. So let me ask you a question. Let's just say, and I'm asking on behalf of my audience, I know entrepreneurs very well, and I know that these questions are going on in their head. So a few things. One is, if I'm looking to become a speaker, how do I even get started? Like I speak with founders all the time and they're behind a computer screen and they're trying to get leads on Google, on Facebook, on Instagram, and they're getting leads that way. And they go, I need to get in front of people. Maybe speaking is good for me. How do I even start?
Yeah, this is a really good question. So first figure out who is your ideal audience. So, you know, that's again, down to your niche, who are your ideal clients and where do they hang out? Where can you find them locally? So there could be local groups, industry associations, organizations, could be conferences that you go to or that you know are relevant to your client base. So find them. I highly recommend attending some of the events or conferences first because you're going to get to know the organizers and they're more likely to ask you to speak or to see your speaker submission, if it's at a conference, and then ask you to speak because they know you. A lot of these big conferences, they'll get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of speaker submissions for 30 spots. They'll get, you know, some people get like 1,000 submissions for 30 spots. The odds are of you getting selected, and they don't know you, is pretty much slim. So start locally. Go to your chamber of commerce. Go to your co-working spaces. You know, we have great places here in Orlando. Go to those industry associations, get to know them, and then say, I have a presentation that would be really valuable to your members or really valuable to your audience on this particular topic. I would love to come share it with them. And odds are, because yeah. They know you, they're going to say yes.
That's such a smart approach, and it seems so simplistic, but it works. So here's some other questions that are brewing in people's minds as they're listening in. I'm not a mind reader, but these are questions that I have. So I'm assuming it's other people too. The fear of standing in front of people. And I know you've kind of given some tips on, you know your subject, be focused on it, practice it. But what other ways can people get over this fear of becoming a speaker? And then maybe when they're driving to the event and they're like, oh my God, I actually have to jump on stage and speak. What are some ways that we could reduce that fear and anxiety?
So there's a scientific biological reason why we get so scared and nervous when we're out, when we're doing public speaking. And I love this kind of blending of art and science with what I do. So the scientific reason is that as our primitive human brains that have not evolved yet to our modern society, when we are standing by ourselves, kind of exposed in front of a group of people, we feel very vulnerable because our brain starts to think, I'm by myself. If there's a tiger or a lion ready to run across the savannah, I have no one here to help me and I'm an easy target. It sounds really weird. So subconsciously, that's what our brain is doing, which is why our adrenaline goes up, our cortisol goes up, our heart beats faster, we get butterflies in our stomach, we get sweaty palms because our body's ready to run away. So you may feel like you want to run away when you're standing in front of a group of people. So just knowing that's going on can help ease some of those nerves. And then there's things like obviously deep breathing helps, feeling really prepared for your content. And it's just the repetition. The more you go out and do it, the easier it's going to get. The first time, you're going to be super nervous. Second time, you're going to be nervous. But the fifth time, you're not going to feel the way you did the first and second time.
Wow. All right. So now let's have some fun. You've been a speaker for a long time. Have you ever been up on stage and you had some type of embarrassing story or something didn't go right or something? Do you have an embarrassing story to share with us?
Okay. I do, but here's what I'm going to say. So I did an episode on my podcast. It's episode number 66, and it's on mastering your speaking style and your stage presence. And it has to do what we've just been talking about, how to prepare, how to get over nerves, what to do the day of your presentation and your delivery. So on that episode, I do share something that happened to me in one of my very earliest moments, times on stage. So I'm not going to say it here because I want the listeners to go listen to my podcast and then they can hear it. So again, that's episode 66 on your mastering your speaking style and your stage presence. Okay. So that's the really good embarrassing one, but I will tell you this. So there have been times where I have gone to do presentations and the technology does not work, right? The projectors, the screen's not working, the laptop's not working, the connectors aren't right, whatever happens. And, you know, we kind of rely on our slides sometimes as crutches, right? It helps us kind of remember our content. So what I tell my clients is that assume your slides will not work. It's great to have pretty slides. It feels like a safety blanket, but I've had several times where the slides just weren't going to happen and you have to go on without them. So I always will have a piece of paper with me that has an outline of kind of the flow of the presentation. So I have that with me that I can go through, but I always say, assume you will not have your slides.
That's great input. So ladies and gentlemen listening in, if you want the juicy story of an embarrassing event, go to episode 66 on her podcast and you'll hear it. I'm going to listen to it too. And this is going to be great. All right. So Carol, this is a great conversation. I love the progression of how you were doing it and getting good at doing it and improving your art and specializing and switching over to helping other people. How did that pivot happen where you went from, I'm doing it for myself, maybe I could help other people do it? How did that happen?
So back a few years ago, as I mentioned, I was in technology. So I had been, you know, I was a self-taught programmer and I've been doing that for a number of years. And then I got to the point where I decided I'm too old for this. I don't want to look at code all day. I want to work with people instead. And so I really had like about a year where I was trying to figure out what exactly I wanted my next business to be. I guess I'm a serial entrepreneur. So I knew something was going to pop into my mind. So I just kind of let it, you know, kind of marinate up there. And people, you know, it's kind of having conversations with different people and they would say, well, Carol, you're really good at this or you're really good at that. So I would kind of think about these different things. And then I wish I could remember the genesis of it, like the exact kind of moment or time when this idea for speaking your brand entered my mind. And I don't, I should have journaled about it back then. And it just all kind of came together. Like everything that I enjoy doing, I love the clients that I get to work with. They're amazing people and they're out there sharing really valuable, useful content to people. And I just feel privileged to be able to work with them.
That's great. So you switched over to I'm helping other people with their speaking and helping people walk through building their core message, which is what you call the signature talk, which they could become the specialist known for, create different variations of it, practice it with and without the slides. Do you help them actually craft that message and help them practice it?
Yes. So the main thing that we do is we work together to create the content for their presentation from the opening to the closing and everything in between. I'm a big believer in audience engagement. I think it's boring to have a speaker up there, whether it's for 30 minutes or an hour, who basically, as far as the speaker is concerned, they really could care less if the audience was there or not. That's boring to most people. We want engagement. We want to feel like the speaker's there to kind of listen to us as much as we're there to listen to them. So whether you have an audience of 20 people, 50, 100, 500, 1,000 or more, there's ways that you can build in that audience engagement. So that's what we work on during as part of the content, as well as it's very much story-driven, but story-driven, not necessarily in a sense of just your personal story, because most people don't want to listen to someone else's personal story for the whole time, but it's like how to make it relevant to the audience. And so that's, we take a personal story and we universalize it for the audience.
Got it. So you talk about audience engaging. So I'm standing up on stage. So let's just say I'm one of your clients and you're walking me through and teaching me. And you say, Josh, you need to be more engaging to the audience. And I'm like, well, this is a talk, you know, how do I engage the audience when I have, you know, a time limit and all this information I got to spit out. How do I engage the audience with that?
Yes. Okay. So I'm so glad you said that you have all this information to spit out, because that's exactly what we don't want to do. So, this is the problem. It's the curse of knowledge. As entrepreneurs, we are so smart about what we do and we're so close to it that we feel like we need to brain dump everything that's in our heads about a topic onto the audience in 30 minutes. And we can't. It took us years and years and years to accumulate all of the knowledge that we have. So what I help my clients do is I pick out what are the most important things to teach, to share with this audience that's going to be the most impactful for them that they can actually do something with. So it's not about overloading them with content. It's about giving them the right amount of content that they can take action on. And as far as audience engagement, it can be as simple as show of hands. If you're at a conference and people have been sitting all day, and this happened to me, and I was the last speaker, like 5 p.m., on that day of the conference. So when I got up, I just said to the audience, all right, how many of you guys are tired? Yes, they raised their hand. How many of you feel overloaded with all the information you've already listened to at this conference? Yes, they raised their hand. Okay, great. We're going to focus today on something really straightforward. We're going to focus just on story structure, and that's it. So I just took them through one thing. And the feedback I got from the audience was, we so appreciated that Carol understood what we had just been going through that day and made us feel comfortable and related to us. So it could just be like, again, it's the idea that I didn't just take an off the shelf talk and just regurgitated it. I understood where the audience was and I worked off of that.
That's good. And that's really good. So raise your hand in the audience, you know, stand up,
yep.
Do something,
ask some
getting
questions.
Them to nod.
Yes. Yep, getting them to write something down, getting them to turn to their person next to them and share something for a minute or two, because we feel like as speakers, oh no, I'm going to lose time and I need to share with them. No. It's going to be so much more memorable when the audience gets to participate in your talk.
All right. So here's the question. What if I'm introverted? Now I'm not, but what if I was introverted, but I knew that this is something that I'm being pulled towards? How could an introvert take the stage?
I'm an introvert, believe it or not.
What?
I know, like I do, I'm a political analyst on TV news. I do lots of public speaking and I have since I was in middle school, I guess. So here's the difference. There's a difference between being shy and being introverted. An introvert means that the way that you get energized or the way that you like to refuel is kind of like by yourself. So I can go out and I can talk to people and, you know, I can be super friendly and I can go on stage, but when I need to recharge, I'm going to have my alone time by myself to kind of think and, you know, read or whatever. Extroverts recharge by being with other people. So that's where they get like that energy source from. Now, if you are shy and you still want to do public speaking, then the same thing we've been talking about, start small, start with a group that you already know that you're comfortable with, and build from there, and then you're gonna get better at it. You know, go to Toastmasters. Toastmasters is great for really forcing you to kind of to get up in front of people and do it, and they're gonna help you through that process. Now, I will say this: if you absolutely hate the idea of public speaking, and you don't need to do it, now as a founder, you probably do. But if you're listening, and you're like, hell no, like I don't want to do this at all. Then you know what? Then don't do it. Like I really believe on strengthening our strengths. And if that's something that you just really, just like right now, it's just not something that is going to be distracting for you to try to do it, then just wait until a better time.
That's really good input. So let's talk money. Talk money for speakers. So, I've got my businesses, I'm starting a software company or whatever, you know, the listener out there is going through and they're like, I would love to do speaking, but I'll only do it if I make money. Like, is there money in speaking?
Okay. if you are a celebrity, whether it's an A-list celebrity or a D-list celebrity, then the answer is yes. If you have been a CEO or, you know, an executive at a high profile company, then the answer is yes. If you're Joe Schmo, then the answer is most likely no. And here's the reason why. As a conference organizer, they need to sell tickets. So why do they have popular names as their keynote speakers? Because those names are recognizable, Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, whomever. People see that like, oh, cool, I want to go see Gary Vaynerchuk speak, so I'm more willing to buy this conference ticket. If they see Joe Schmo as the keynote speaker, no matter how great you are, you don't have an audience and a platform that's coming along with you. So you can get there, but just expect that it's not going to happen out of the gate. You have to build that, and it takes time. You have to build that, and then you can get those really big speaker fees. But most of my clients are not looking for those big speaker fees. They're running their business. Like, they're not going to be on the professional speaking circuit, traveling around the country, around the world, 300 days a year. That's the opposite of what they want. So they're using speaking to build brand awareness and lead generation for their business.
So having your expectations set on this while approaching speaking, it's getting started. It's an investment. Right. So I'm going to invest this time, energy, effort to prepare my signature talk, to give the signature talk, and then to create the follow-up in order to get conversations, lead generation, build relationships, and build brand awareness. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think having those expectations is probably a really good idea for people out there thinking about speaking. Now let's talk about celebrity. When you jump on stage, you almost become like a mini celebrity. Now, I mean, you're probably not like, you know, the Mel Gibsons of the world.
I don't think you're even on the D list, right?
Yeah, I'm on the Z list, right? So, yeah, but people come to you after the show or after you give a conversation, and they go, you know, hey, I appreciated you speaking or something. Like, do you have any like really? Do you have any stories from your from the people that you've worked with of what happened after the follow-up for people who weren't a celebrity, but you know, some of the results from speaking, I guess is the question I'm asking.
Yeah. So I can think of right now, the first one that comes to mind is a client of mine. I helped her with her TEDx talk. So she spoke at TEDx Orlando in the summer of 2017. And she is a financial coach. So she helps individuals and couples with not financial planning, it's a little bit different, but like the mindset behind their financial situation. So she did a really powerful TEDx talk on money shame. She has a very tragic story about her brother. And I'll send you the link, Josh, if you want to include it in the show notes so that listeners can go and watch the TEDx talk. So she did that, and we worked together for several months to get her prepared for that. She did an incredible job delivering it, and the story was so powerful that she's starting a movement. She's writing a book based on this now. So the TEDx talk and the work we did was really the foundation for the book that she wrote. She really wants to start a movement around money shame and having more people understand what it is and how it impacts them and their families. And she's gotten clients, like lots of clients who were sitting in the audience that day in Orlando. But then as TEDx talks, they're on YouTube. They go around. So she's gotten clients from all over the country because she can work with them virtually as well from doing that talk. But really, is, you know, for her, the business ROI was good, but she felt this sense of accomplishment of having gone out there and shared a very personal story of her own. But she knew she wanted to do that so that she could impact more people.
Yeah. Wow, that's powerful. Yeah, we would love to have a link to share about that. So guys and gals and fellow entrepreneurs listening into the show, if you go into the show notes, we'll have episode number 66 of Carol's that you could click on and listen to. So we'll share that. But then also this TEDx talk about money shame, encourage you to listen to that. So you could see one of Carol's clients, you know, see the results of one of her coaching sessions and or one of her clients and see that. I think that's incredible. So she created a movement by being authentic, transparent, and sharing her story. Let me ask a question, and then we'll kind of pivot into your podcast, because I'd like to know more about that. But as you're training a bunch of speakers, right, are there any do not do this? Like, are there any no-nos of speaking? Now, you mentioned do not sell from the stage. Why not? And what are some other do not do this?
Mm-hmm. The reason I don't like the selling from the stage, number one, is that most events and conferences explicitly prohibit it. Because, you know, back starting several years ago, more and more people were doing it at conferences, more speakers were doing it, and they got really bad feedback from their audience. Audiences don't like it. And so now when you do speaker submissions for conferences, it will specifically say you are not allowed to sell from the stage. It's gotten so bad, they won't even let you do an opt-in to the audience, which is kind of a shame. Like, I feel at least they should let, you know, the speaker present an opt-in, a free opt-in for the audience. So that's reason number one. Reason number two is that audiences don't like it because no one wants to be sold to. If I say to you, I have something to sell you, you're like, eh. But if I say, you know, I have a story to share with you, or I have something valuable to teach you, people are going to be much, much more inclined to want to listen to that. So that's, yeah, definitely don't sell from the stage. And the other mistakes that kind of what we talked about is not engaging with the audience. So not, you know, not having a way to kind of have it go back and forth between you and the audience. And then I actually have a podcast episode on this too called 5 Mistakes You're Making in Your Presentations That Turn Off Your Audience. See, you have such good questions, Josh. And so that's also an episode to listen to. And then, so there's 5 mistakes that I pinpointed there. So the audience engagement is one of them. The other one is not being prepared. And you would think that most speakers would be prepared. I went to a conference several years ago, and this was a woman who's an entrepreneur and she's a speaker. Like, she's known for going around and doing talks. She was not prepared. Like, it was multi-track session conference. So I chose to go to her session instead of another one. And she got up there and she was kind of just randomly talking about stuff. Like, she would pull a book from the table and like talk about this book. And then she would pull like a magazine and talk. There was no structure. There was no purpose to what she was talking about. And I was pissed because I should have gone to the other session instead. So I think she felt she was so experienced as a speaker that she didn't have to prepare or she didn't have to understand her audience, but you always have to, no matter how many times you've done it.
Yeah. Now those are really great, great points. So 5 mistakes that you're making in your presentation. Mm-hmm. Once again, I'm plugging your podcast. You guys got to listen to her podcast. So there's a few mistakes that do not, you know, do not sell from the stage. Do not engage people, mm-hmm. be prepared. These are really, good things to do. Let me ask you a question, before we switch over to podcasting, because I love this subject, but how do you prepare for a talk and how do you prepare to get to know the audience before you even show up?
Mm-hmm. I'll ask the conference organizer or the event organizer to tell me about their audience. So who's going to be sitting in those seats? Tell me about them, their kind of like demographics, you know, gender, age ranges, things like that. But also, where are they in their business or whatever it happens to be? So you could have beginner audiences, intermediate or advanced. If it's a beginner audience, you know that your content has to be geared to them. You can't use a lot of jargon or lingo they may be unfamiliar with. Conversely, if it's a more advanced audience, if you're giving them basics, they're going to be bored and they're not going to get that much value. So you have to understand kind of where they are in the journey of whatever your topic is. If you have a mixed audience and there's a way to go about kind of appealing to both ends of the spectrum at the same time. So definitely ask the organizer as much as you can about the audience. If it's a small group, like say you're doing a workshop, send a survey ahead of time to those people. Is, you know, say it's like 15, 20 people for a workshop. Send a survey ahead of time asking them key questions so you can get that information back. Now, if neither of those options are available, or even if they are, at the start of your presentation, ask some questions. So how many of you here are brand new to podcasting? Raise your hand. How many of you have been podcasting for a year or more? Raise your hand. I did this when I spoke at a podcasting conference. What types of podcasts? If you're doing business podcasts, stand up. If you're doing a hobby, you know, so that way I knew who was in my audience and I could then customize my content based on what the responses were.
So that's why it's really important to be a specialist so that you can tailor your conversation, right? So it's not just speaking, but it's more of a conversation with your audience, and you could tailor that because you know your specialty mm-hmm. so well.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah, you need to, your signature talk needs to be what it is that you do, like what your knowledge base is. Because that's going to make it so much easier for you to really come off as the expert authority.
Got it. So I love this topic. Let's switch over. I don't have any good segues. I'm not a joke teller or anything, but let's talk about podcasting. All right. So when did you start your podcast? And why don't you tell us a little bit about what that is? Because you're coaching, you're consulting, you're teaching people to speak, but then you're also speaking through this digital platform called a podcast. So talk to us about why you did this and how you did this. Mm-hmm.
So the podcast started in early 2017, and I have been an avid podcast listener for 10 years. So I was back in the day when I didn't have an iPod. This is probably, 2007, 2008, and I had the little iPod, and I would have to hook the iPod up to my laptop to download the podcast episodes from there onto my iPod, because the iPod didn't have Wi-Fi or anything. And then I would go running and listen to the podcast episodes. This is how old school it was. And I was committed. And so I've always loved the medium. I love audio content, and because it feels so intimate. You know, you're listening in your earbuds, and you really feel like you get to know the people that you're listening to, especially when you're listening to them on a weekend, week out basis. So I always knew I wanted to start a podcast. I just had to find the right time in my schedule and with my business. So early 2017 is when it launched. And here are the main benefits that I have found from it. When you're producing consistent content, week in and week out, the people who are in your audience and in your community are recognizing that you are as committed to your business as they will be if they choose to work with you, if they choose to invest with you. You know, especially online, we see so many of these people kind of come and go, right? Someone comes in, new online entrepreneur, they've got lots of passion and energy, and then they kind of fizzle away after 6 months or a year. But when you're producing consistent content, whether it's a Facebook Live weekly show, a podcast, a YouTube series, whatever the content is, people recognize it that you're in it for the long haul. So it's a worthwhile investment for them to work with you because you're not going to be gone tomorrow.
Sure. And I guess, was it easy to choose the subject of your podcast because that's your business too?
Yes. Well, I knew that because podcasting is a great deal of investment and time. I'd probably spend about one workday a week equivalent to produce my weekly podcast between what I do and what my VA does for it. And so I knew it had to be aligned with my business because I had to have an ROI for it. As much as I would love to do, say, a passion project podcast, I knew I wouldn't stick with it if I wasn't getting an ROI with it, because, you know, having a business is time consuming. And so you want to make sure that whatever content you're producing aligns with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started your podcast. What kind of challenges have you found, and what kind of like really great joys have you experienced because of podcasting?
The biggest challenge is definitely the time commitment. So as I mentioned, you know, I probably spend myself 5 to 6 hours a week, which doesn't seem like a long time, but that's a day, right? It's almost a work day. And then my VA does about 2 or 3 hours on it a week. So it's definitely the time commitment, but I have found that because I enjoy it so much and because I get great feedback and ROI from it, it's worth it. The joys of it have really been connecting with the listeners. So I have a private Facebook group that goes along with the podcast. So people can join that and then they can ask questions, get more information, chat with the guests in the Facebook group. So it's a great way to build that community. And here's a tip that I will give to any other podcasters out there or people thinking of podcasting or even producing their own content, is that it's great to interview guests, and I do that. And I did that for most of the first 9 months of my podcast. Almost every episode was a guest interview, and a lot of them were my clients because I wanted to give back to my clients as well and showcase them. But I have found that I've gotten the most traction from my podcast by doing solo episodes. So training on the topic, like preparing, delivering your speech, or the 5 mistakes you're making, or on story structure, on why not to sell from the stage. When I do those solo trainings, that's when I get the most engagement and the most leads from those episodes. So Josh, I have a challenge for you. I would love to see you do some solo episodes on your podcast because it really showcases your expertise in addition to doing the guest interviews.
And I love a challenge. I think it's fun. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will see some of that in the future and on this show and the other things that I'm working on. So if you want to know more about Josh, I just got challenged by the legendary Carol Cox.
And I will follow up with you in a few months, and I'm going to check in and see how you're doing.
Scout's honor. I'll do it. Cool. So you're running a podcast show. You've been doing it for over a year now. What kind of, so you're getting leads, you're getting conversations, you're really getting a lot of traction, and you're serving your clients because you're highlighting them on the show and helping them get in front of your audience and building an audience. What is the, I guess when you're doing this, how do you decide who comes on your show, and how do you say no to someone who might not be a good fit for your show?
Okay, this is really good. So my number one criteria is that it has to be valuable to my audience. So I know pretty well, you know, I know very well who my audience are. Most of them are women entrepreneurs who want to do speaking for their business as a marketing channel. So I have to think about what type of content is going to be most valuable to them. And then if I have a content idea that comes up and I'm not the expert on it, then I will try to find a guest who would be a good fit for that. Now I get pitches, because once you have a podcast, people will start emailing you pitches. And 98% of them, I just file away. I don't even respond to them because I'd never have heard of these people before. It's a template email that they send me that they probably have sent to tons of other podcasters. You can tell they haven't listened to any episodes. They know nothing about my audience and my podcast. So I'm not going to spend the time writing back to them. The types of guests I want on my podcast are people who care about my community for two reasons. Number one, it's going to be a better conversation because they've been on my radar or I've seen them somewhere in my community. And number two, it's going to be more ROI for that guest to come on because if they are already familiar to my community, this is another touch point for them and they're going to get more traction from my listeners because they're known versus someone hearing them for a half an hour and then never hearing from them again.
Yeah, that's really good. Now you mentioned ROI.
I know, that's like my mantra, right?
I love it. I love it because I mean, it's a great way as entrepreneurs, you know, we have to be very careful of our time, our energy, our resources because we could get pulled in so many directions. How do you measure the ROI of your podcast, of your consulting, of your speaking? How do you measure that?
So for the podcast, the podcasting is a long game. Everyone told me, and I have seen it myself, that it takes 9 to 12 months of, you know, consistently producing a podcast. It takes 9 to 12 months to get that momentum going. You're not going to get it the first month or two. It just takes time. I have people who've just in the past month have told me, Carol, I've been listening to your podcast since the very beginning. I had never heard from them before. But finally, after a year, they kind of reached out to me or they joined my Facebook group. So it took that long for some of them. So it's definitely a long game. As far as what the results that I've seen is building that community and having access to that community. That's why I have one of my main calls to action on the podcast is to join my email list and then to get access to the Facebook group. Because I want to stay in contact with them. And because the podcast is very one way, I can't hear the listeners. I have no way of asking them questions when getting immediate feedback. So I need a way to do that. So building that community, number one. And then as far as ROI from, say, speaking, then,
So in terms of speaking, we just had a brief interruption. I think it was on my end. So you said an ROI in terms of speaking. Will you pick up from there?
Yes. And so the ROI that I've gotten from speaking is what I do is that I will hand out feedback forms to the audience and they will fill out the feedback form. So they'll tell me, you know, this is the thing that I got out of Carol's presentation, like the number one thing that I learned. Here's what I would recommend to make Carol's presentation better or something else that I would have liked to have learned. So they're filling out their contact information. They're filling out that. And then at the bottom of the feedback form are checkboxes. And so the checkboxes can say things like, I'm interested in learning more about your one-on-one coaching, or I would like to schedule a strategy session with you, or I'd like to join your email list, or I'd like to invite you to be on my podcast, whatever it happens to be. You hand those out and you collect them back at the end or have someone, a friend or a colleague collect them for you at the end. those are your leads. You're not relying on people in the audience to contact you afterwards and remembering to contact you. You're getting that feedback. It's incredibly valuable because you're getting testimonials, because most people are going to say positive things about you, and you're getting to know exactly what it is, how they want to work with you, what they're interested in. So that's really, you can't just rely on people to remember to email you after the fact.
Yeah, that is so good. So what it sounds like is the biggest way to become a really great speaker is really to be an incredible listener, to listen what people really want and really need. Carol, this is absolutely fantastic. So for those listening who want to know more about you, want to know more about your services, where could people find you and learn more about you and connect with you?
Yeah, so I have a free PDF guide that listeners can download based on what we talked about today. So they can get that by going to speakingyourbrand.com/Josh, so your first name. So just go there and you can get that. And that's going to talk about the strategic speaking, so finding speaking engagements, preparing, like checklist for preparing and what to do the day of to help with some of those nerves and things like that. So that's a fantastic guide that they can get there. And then I also invite listeners to check out my podcast. It has lots of great information. So I do those solo trainings. I also do on-air coaching calls. So I'll bring on my clients and we'll do a coaching call together where I help them with their presentation. So you're a fly on the wall. So you get to hear what goes on in a coaching session.
Wow, that sounds really awesome. So I actually have my own page on your website, which is /Josh. So I'm now a
you are the Josh
celebrity,
right? If I ever have a podcast where I go on with someone else named Josh, I'm just gonna have to give them another name.
I'm the first and only. So this is great. So, Carol, is there anything that I should have asked you that I didn't ask you, or that you would really like to share before we wrap up this interview?
Josh, you have been a fantastic interviewer. I do a lot of podcast guesting where I go on, and you are really one of the best interviewers that I've been on. So kudos to you. You're really good at this. And so here's where I would leave to the listeners, and this is a challenge that I will leave to them, since a lot of you are probably in the Orlando area, since this podcast is for Orlando entrepreneurs. I want to see you out and about speaking at some groups. So find those groups, those industry associations, those organizations that are a good fit for you, and approach them and just start small. Start with a 30-minute kind of little mini workshop, mini training for their audience, for their members, and grow from there.
Awesome. I think that's a great challenge, and thank you for the compliment. I think this is a great challenge to myself and to the audience out there to take a step out on stage and share your knowledge with the audience, because what you've learned can help a lot of people maybe avoid some type of pain, or maybe help them accomplish something specific in their world. So I encourage you to be brave and to, you know, take this challenge with me. I'm going to do it too. And try to get a speaking opportunity. And what you could do to continue the conversation, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a speaking gig coming up, feel free to go to OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org and go to this episode, and you could leave a comment or something and say, hey, here's a speaking gig that I have coming up. And you know, if we're able to go, we'll go and we'll check you out. We'll give you a high five and we'll go there. So
I would love that.
You've been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So ladies and gentlemen, you've been challenged by Carol and myself to, take the stage. Carol, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been really valuable. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh.
Yeah. And fellow entrepreneurs in the audience, thank you for listening into the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show, where we talk to Orlando entrepreneurs. If you are interested in becoming a guest on the show, just go to OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org and you can find more information about me, about Carol, because she's going to be all over the show notes, and about the show and what we're trying to do, bring in Orlando entrepreneurs together. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in. We hope you have a lovely day. We'll talk to you on the next episode. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode.
If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You could also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.